Hello, everybody. Dr. Lonnie Stewart here from the Healthcare Education Transformation Podcast. Are you a physical therapy student about to start studying for the National Physical Therapy Examination? Or maybe you're a professor, a program director, or a clinical instructor who teaches DPT students preparing for the NPTE? Either way, we would recommend checking out our sponsor, NPTE Final Frontier, and the community they've built around preparing for and succeeding on the NPTE. That exam and the preparation that goes along with it can be long, tedious, difficult, and stress-inducing, but it doesn't have to be. NPTE Final Frontier has the tactics and resources to help address all of the usual barriers. They even have scholarships to help with NPTE study courses, FSBPT registration fees, and even research opportunities. And if that's not enough, they're even donating to the very first annual HET Podcast Scholarship to be awarded at the end of every year. Go to npteff.com for all of the details and use code HET for 10% off all purchases. Links to both the NPTE Final Frontier and their scholarship options are available in the show notes. And now, let's get ready to learn.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Healthcare Education Transformation Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. F. Scott Feel, and I've got with me two very special guests today who just recently presented at CSM on the exact topic we will be talking about today, Dr. Christine Kabelka and Dr. Karina Siracusa. Ladies, thanks so much for joining us. Thanks for coming on to talk about the differences between DPT, EDD, DocSci, PsyD, PhD, all the Ds, all the degrees that are out there, and what we can do to kind of clarify what they are and what, you know, what people can do if they're interested in learning more about them. So I guess let's do this. Christine, let's start with you. If you wouldn't mind just telling us a little bit about your academic background and how it's led you to where you are today.
Yeah. So my academic background, I actually have a master's in physical therapy. And as I was thinking about getting into academia, knew that I either needed to go back to school for a transitional doctorate or some other higher ed degree. And that led me to, honestly, I didn't even like think about EDD at the time when I was going into it. I was like, I don't know what this DSci thing is. That seems weird. And so went the PhD route. I actually have a PhD in rehabilitation science, and all of my research as part of my degree was done in a basic physiology lab. So kind of a complete departure from clinic work. But as a women's health practitioner, a pelvic health practitioner, was really struggling to find programs that offered that advanced degree and were doing pelvic health related research. And so had to kind of search around a little bit and ended up in a lab where my advisor was doing muscle physiology research in ovarian hormones and how hormones and lack thereof impact skeletal muscle function. And I was like, well, that's PT related. I can make that work and translate that. And also then had the advantage of being at a university with a DPT program where I could get teaching experience. So I could work as a TA in the DPT program as part of my PhD education, could then get a teaching practicum with that instructional design component. So objective writing, how do you build a course? Those are kinds of things that you don't get in a lot of other programs. And so that was super attractive. And that kind of led me to pick that program once they accepted me, and then graduated in 2018 and started in academia and went from all in person to all online to some weird something in between. And then kind of are back to where we are with a little more of that traditional face to face model. So that's kind of been my academic journey.
Awesome. Well, Karina, let's hear your story and your journey.
My journey is a little bit newer, actually. So I graduated in 2005 with my DPT and, you know, enjoyed teaching, but, you know, didn't think that it was going to be my primary, you know, thing. I really didn't have immediate plans to go into academia. So started practicing right out, you know, out of the gate in 2005. Loved it. But as I kind of got the teaching bug, so I started adjuncting and I started teaching some continuing ed, and it's really found that I enjoyed it, and also found that, you know, I was just kind of moving away from that clinical, wanting to do long-term clinical practice. I started researching what it would take to get into academia. And at that point, CAPTI had already kind of made the ruling that, you know, the majority of the faculty needed to have that terminal doctorate. So even though I have two board certifications, so I'm board certified in both women's health and oncology, I knew I was going to have to get that degree. And then also when kind of trying to decide which degree to get, both of my board certifications are kind of in niche practices, right? So not it's something that PT schools maybe spend a lecture on or maybe a week. And so I knew I was going to really have to make myself look attractive in other ways to really get a job in academia. And so I decided to go more towards the EDD route, so the doctorate in education. I was very lucky that I found AT Still University, which is where I got my EDD. I just graduated literally 2 weeks ago. It's after a lot of work. I chose the EDD because for a couple of reasons. In talking kind of with my academic advisor from my PT school, originally she said, go the EDD route because you have done so much as a clinician. You need to learn how to become a teacher. She's like, you don't know how to write course objectives. She goes, you have a gift for being in front of the classroom, but you don't know all that other stuff that you're going to need in order to really be involved in a PT program. And so that was why I picked it. I picked AT Still specifically because their EDD focuses on health professionals. So it was not, I didn't want a program that was a bunch of people trying to be high school principals. I wanted something that was geared towards higher education and graduate education. And so that was the program. But it took a while for me to find a program that checked all those boxes for me. A lot of them that I looked at kind of picked one or the other. So, but I recently started full time in January with South College, which is a hybrid program. So that brought its own challenges because it is all hybrid. And even from an adjuncting perspective, most of the adjuncting I had done was in brick and mortar schools. So I felt the EDD also helped prepare me for that because we did a lot on hybrid education. So that is my journey.
Yeah, I have a very similar journey. I, started as an English major, got my BA in English, then I did the master's program of PT of physical therapy at East Carolina. Then they offered the transitional DPT. I started it, couldn't finish it. The window of opportunity closed. I had some family health issues that went on. I lost my dad. And luckily, St. Augustine accepted some of the credits from the transitional doctorate. So I was able to transfer some over. So I finished the transitional doctorate there. While I was at St. Augustine, the head of the EDD said, hey, would you be interested in teaching ever? And I said, no, not really. My dad was an English teacher for many years, sat in on his classes. I want no part of that. Those kids are jerks. And he was like, well, professional education's a little different. They're paying to be there. They have to learn your stuff. Like, these are adults, right? Mature adults. I use mature in air quotes sometimes, but, and so I get it, right? And I was like, maybe it is a good idea. When I retire, I could go, some community college down by a beach town and maybe teach a class or two. That's what I'll use it for, right? When my hands give out, my back goes out, my knees give out, I can teach, right, when I retire. Then 2018, I graduate and I go right back into clinical because the dissertation burnt me out. And then 2020 hits and, COVID hits and I didn't really want to do clinical anymore. And luckily, a job opened up at St. Augustine in their flex program here in Austin. And so I've been, teaching full time ever since. But I had done some adjuncting for Baylor's 2-year hybrid program, which is, very similar to the South model. So I'd like to say that I had the foresight to say, look, the EDD is a great option because it does teach you curriculum development. It teaches you how to teach. It teaches you all these great things. And if physical therapy falls off into the ocean and is no more, at least you could teach general education, K-12, college education, whatever. But I didn't. I literally just kind of fell into it. And, in hindsight, it's worked out, right? It's been a great thing that's given me a lot of opportunity. you know, both within academia and outside of academia. So it's been wonderful. I love it. I love the EDD. I learned it. The didactic work was amazing. I loved learning how to teach and learn. I love the theory of knowledge and learning. I didn't like the dissertation process, but that's a whole nother rabbit hole that I think we leave for another day. You touched on something, though, I want to go back to, and that is the CAPD rule, if you will, of currently it kind of sits at about 50% of DPT programs need to have terminal degrees for their core faculty. And it sounds like in 2025, they're loosening that up a little where 10% maybe can be in a program but not finished. But long story longer, you can have a DPT, especially if you have a board certification, right? And teach in a DPT program. But most of the core faculty, 50% or so or more, have to have a terminal degree. What are your ladies' thoughts on that? What do you think about that? Just in general, that I can't believe that's a thing personally, but let's hear what you have to say. Karina, lead us up. What are your thoughts on that rule?
You know, so it's funny because before I started doing my EDD coursework, I kind of thought, yeah, I don't agree with this rule. You know, there's so much that can be gleaned from clinical work and that's what you're really trying to teach them to do. But then the further I got into my own academic work, I thought, yeah, I needed this. You know, I think that this was a good thing. So, and I think whether you do the EDD or the PhD, it's still also teaching you how to teach someone how to think, not just those hands-on skills. And so having gone through the program, I actually kind of agree with it. I really do think you cannot have a program made up of all clinical faculty, like people who do not have that. I don't think it needs to swing one way or the other. I don't think you also need 100% of your faculty to have terminal doctorates, but I do kind of agree with the rule.
So you think it's in the Goldilocks zone right now?
I do. All right.
Christine, let's hear your take on it.
I would say I agree, but if you kind of take a step back from CAPD and you think about all of the other things that is expected of a faculty member, having that terminal degree, whether it's an EDD, a PhD, DSci, whatever, gives you exposure, at least, to what all those other things are. I think that kind of gets overlooked coming from a clinical side is it's not just the teaching. My workload is only, and I say only because I'm in a small liberal arts college that is teaching is the job, right? Is only 80% of my job. The remainder of my job is research, because that's the CAPD expectation as well. It's committee work, whether that's within my own department or within the larger college university. It's student advising. It's, oh God, I don't know, all of the other things that we do, right? If you are not prepared for that, that's where you're going to drown, right? In addition to the teaching component and being like, how do I write objectives? How do I get what's in my head clinically out of my mouth in a way that makes sense for the students, right? Because like Karina said, it's not just the psychomotor hands-on skills. It's all of the other pieces behind deciding to do that skill and when that skill is appropriate or not. If you don't have that balance of faculty who understand all those other things that can mentor now your clinical focused faculty, your faculty coming in without that terminal degree, you're going to kind of flounder.
I'll play devil's advocate just a little bit here, but my workload is 50% teaching. And then the other 50% is divided up amongst research, service to the community and university, and student mentoring. So service part is sitting on boards and committees and doing all those things to, you know, benefit the university. And then, like you said, student mentoring, right? So I always say this, it was a huge career change going from clinical to academia. I did not realize, I thought I just knew the stuff. I could just teach it, right? Like I just know it. I can do that, right? But it is a huge career change. There's a lot of things that go into academia that you just don't know about until you get into it, right? And maybe you do. If you've done your research and you know somebody and you've talked to them and they've guided you or mentored you, that might help. I kind of went into it a little bit more on the blind side and was like, whoa, I thought I was just going to show up and teach. This is a lot. So my devil's advocate part of all this is that I've seen PhDs who are terrible teachers, and I've seen DPTs who are amazing teachers. Now, the PhDs are phenomenal researchers, and they get tons of, you know, cited works and just great research out there, and they're really good at what they do. But that's their focus, and that's where they want to specialize, and that's what they want to do. Whereas the DPT knows not a lot about research and maybe doesn't have the publications, et cetera, et cetera. But man, they're really good at teaching, and they love what they do, and they love bringing the clinic into the classroom and vice versa. So, you know, I can see both ends of the spectrum there. And again, maybe it is in the Goldilocks zone, and 50% is the right number. I just know that I'm a little concerned about the future with all these new programs expanding and not a whole lot of options to go from DPT to terminal degree. Are we going to be able to fulfill all these spots that are going to be opening up? I guess to be determined, but you know, we'll see.
And I think that's where I think maybe that's where some effort needs to be focused at looking at how do we make it a little bit easier for transitioning into academia and have more. It just like we're opening up all these PT programs, maybe we need to open up some more PhD, PT focused programs, or EDD or DSI or all of that kind of stuff to help mentor people and get people into that. And then also just introduce it as an option to PT students as well. I mean, I know, like, graduating from PT school, I was like, no, I don't want to do any of that. I don't want to be in school. But I think not necessarily to say, oh, just go right out of school, but also just to say, like, hey, if academia might be your focus, here's what you want to think about in 5 years after practicing for a little while.
Yeah. And that's the tough part, is that I don't think they should go into it right out of school, because you haven't had any clinical practice. You haven't gotten your hands dirty yet. You haven't treated patients. Right. Like, it doesn't make sense to go from a DPT right into a terminal degree. But then what do we do in the meantime to kind of remind them and be like, hey, this is still an option. There's things you can do in the meantime to get ready and prepared for when you do want to do that. You know, it's like, it's super hard to bridge that gap, I think. So yeah, I think we need to make them aware that, hey, just so you know, if you do want to teach eventually, here's a bunch of cool things you should start looking into, right? So that 4 or 5 years down the line, when you're ready to think about this, here's some, you know, resources and things you can do in the meantime. So that's a really good point, I think. Well, I'd like to kind of talk next about the PhD. Let's start there. Okay, Christine, I'll let you take this one. What is a PhD? What are some of the pros and cons? What does it look like as a terminal degree?
Yeah, so a PhD is, you know, Doctor of Philosophy. So I would say it kind of historically has been that terminal degree for any number of disciplines, right? So you can have a PhD in chemistry. You can have a PhD in biology, right? So it's not a unique necessarily degree. The one thing I would say that kind of is really different about it, it is heavily research focused. The kind of PhD model currently is you go do a PhD, you do a postdoc, you apply for grants, you now get a teaching position, and you're pumping out a ton of research, and now you're training the next PhD people behind you. So it's just kind of the circular kind of feeding into one another revolving door of PhD people, right, in that discipline. That's kind of the big thing. That's the goal. And so for me, I know I had to search out the teaching component along with the research component. And then when you're talking like PT PhD research, there's a huge time component to that as well, because now you're introducing research in human subject trials and you have to recruit and all those things. You know, in hindsight, not my goal going in, but in hindsight, really happy that I ended up with a kind of basic science laboratory doing research, you know, with a mouse model of menopause, where I could be like, hello, mouse company, I need 60 mice for the study. And in 2 weeks, they were there and ready to go. And, you know, 6 weeks later, the study was done. So I was able to do my PhD in 4 years, which is like unheard of, full time. So start to end, 4 years, I was done. When typically it tends to be maybe a little bit longer. So you're in that like 6 year or 7 year-ish range to get all your things done for your dissertation to complete all the requirements of that. So I think that answered the question.
Yeah, I guess just like a follow-up cost-wise, right? some PhD programs cost a pretty penny and some are actually paid for by the grants and the research you're doing. How does that all kind of work?
That's actually something I looked at in making my decision. I had kind of said from the outset, if I'm going to go back to school, how do I not pay for it? Right. I still have master's loans and things. Or how can I, you know, pay less? Right. So instead of, are there opportunities within that program for me to have a teaching assistant job, to have a research assistant job that might offset tuition costs a little bit or give me reduced tuition? And then in searching programs and talking to more people, I was like, well, can I go somewhere that's fully funded so I don't have to pay anything? It's a huge reduction. So I had been working in the clinic for, oh God, what, like 10 years before I started my PhD. So I'm like, that's going to be a massive pay cut because now I'm a graduate assistant stipend that's significantly less than I was making in the clinic, but I'm not accruing additional student debt. And so that was something super important to me and ended up at University of Minnesota with an advisor who had full funding. So I did not have to pay additional, but it is something to consider in the programs and ask the questions. Because I looked at a couple other programs that were newer principal investigators or newer to training PhDs, so couldn't guarantee that they would have grant funding for the whole time I was there with the program. So,
yeah, the last thing DPT students want to hear is that, oh, you need to take on more debt. And now for a quick shout out to our newest sponsor, Varela Financial. If you're a physical therapist and you have student loan debt, you got to talk to these guys. What makes them unique is that they view financial planning like running hurdles on a track. And for PTs, the first hurdle many of us run into is student loan debt. Varela Financial will help you get over that hurdle. They not only take the time to explain to you which plans you individually qualify for and how those plans work, but they also take the time to show you what your individual case looks like, mapped out within each option. So if you're looking for help on your student loan debt or any area of personal finances, we recommend working with them. I use Varela Financial personally, and they were able to help me lower my student loan repayment from about $1,800 a month down to about $135 per month simply by finding the right repayment plan that best fit me, my family, and our life goals. You can check them out at VarelaFinancial.com. Link is in the show notes if you need it for reference, and tell them the HET podcast crew sent you. And now back to the show.
Well, Karina, let's go to you next and let's talk about my bias and my favorite of the terminal degrees, the EDD, the educational doctorate. Talk to us a little bit about what that is and what that looks like, some pros and cons. Give us the ins and outs.
So, you know, the educational doctorate is, as Christine said, the PhD is kind of, you know, obviously you can get a PhD in anything. Educational doctorate, you're looking at education specifically. There are lots of different avenues for the EDD, though. So there, you know, are more general EDDs. There are EDDs that are focused for elementary education and post-secondary and graduate level education. And so you do have to look at that and narrow that down. If you just Google EDD, you're going to come up with a lot of options that as a physical therapist probably would not be right for you. But it is teaching you how to teach. It's teaching you how to do all of like the kind of grunt work that Christine was talking about as far as creating a syllabus. And here's how to create a rubric. And here's how to, you know, grade appropriately and make sure your assessment is matching what you're trying to teach. All those things that I thought I knew and then got into my program and realized I didn't know, you know, realized how not great some of my previous classes were. So it does teach you that. It also just teaches you about how humans learn, you know, and how to help specifically in my program, the adult learner, because that's very different than teaching elementary or even undergraduate education. So that's really what it helps with. You know, your dissertation is usually has something to do with, you know, for me, physical therapy education or graduate school education. From a research standpoint, though, it is a little bit, I won't lie, easier because I'm not in a lab. You're generally either doing, you know, more qualitative research where maybe you're conducting some focus groups with some human subjects, or you're doing more survey-based research or retrospective research. So for me, I didn't want to be in a lab. and so that was kind of something that was a little bit more attractive to me. The other nice thing about the EDD is that you can do it while you're still working. So I was working a full-time job while I did mine because mine was an online program. It was a lot of nights and it was a lot of weekends. You know, I haven't had a Sunday free in the last 2.5 years because of that. To kind of Christine's point, yes, I got to work the whole time, but I accrued a whole bunch of debt. At the time, it was an investment in my future. I knew I wanted to move into academia, so I knew it was something I had to pay for. Luckily, the hospital that I worked for actually had some educational assistance, even if it was a degree that would take you away from that job. Eventually, they still had that available, so that offset some of it. But I was in the situation where I was so close to paying off my PT school loans. And then I basically put all that money right back onto my, onto my loan balance sheet. And so that was also something that I had to wrap my mind around, was that, yeah, I have to pay for this. So it was, that balance, checks and balances.
Yeah. I had a very, very similar experience. I worked full time while I did it. Nights and weekends. I had a family, 2 kids. I don't know what I was thinking, but got through it somehow, right? Worked it out, figured it out, did accrue another, you know, 40 or 50 grand worth of debt to add on to, you know, what I already had. So that wasn't fun. But like I said, in the end, it really did open up a ton of opportunities for me that some I didn't even foresee, right? Obviously, yeah, I could use it for academia. I knew that. But there have been opportunities in consulting and in, you know, course development and things that I just never would have even imagined. It makes more sense to me now that there is a nice combo of PhDs and researchers and educational doctorates in a program, because they can help with different aspects and areas, you know, and for me, I'm just starting to get into educational research. So that's going to be interesting, to say the least. You know, I don't know enough about it to really, you know, say one way or the other what I feel about it. But I think that, you know, I'm going to need help. I know that. And I know I can lean on my PhD folks to help me get through a study, you know, and I can lean on the EDD folks to help with curriculum development. And like you said, rubrics and how to teach and like how to transfer the knowledge. So it's a nice combination now that I see it in the programs. Let's have both of you then talk to a little bit the doc sci, the sci B or the DSC, or, you know, as it's called, but what is that all about? What does that degree look like? Either one of you can touch this one. I don't know enough about it to even give us a lead off here.
Again, I think it's similar in PhD and EDD. I think it is geared a little bit more towards PT, but even within that, there are so many avenues and things that you can do. So I think it has a little bit of that kind of build your own program aspect to it in terms of like your research track, right? So in any of these programs that we're talking about, there's going to be a base set of here are the classes related to this degree that you have to take to kind of give you that foundation for the degree. But the research component can be whatever you want it to be. So there's nice flexibility, at least in the EDD and the DSci. I would say less so, you don't have that flexibility in the PhD. You're a little bit like pick your advisor correctly up front and make sure you want to do what they do. But there's a little bit more of that flexibility in being able to really explore and research topics that you're passionate or really interested in. And that's kind of maybe what I know. Karina, you might know a little bit more than I do. So
yeah, so the AT Still where I went has also a DSC program, and I have a friend that is in it now, and she was really interested in health policy and administration within the physical therapy realm, and so was able to do her DSC in that area. And she wants to get into academia as well, but really wanted to be able to teach to that, you know, teach to health policy and administration. She really values advocacy with students, and so she felt like that was going to be the best way. And also, she's working full time as a clinician while she's doing it, giving her the ability to do some administrative work within the hospital system. So it's applicable to kind of both of the avenues that she's pursuing, you know, trying to it's helpful now, you know, while she's still a clinician, but at the same time, it's going to help her in the future. But I would agree, it tends to be geared much more towards kind of the clinical side of things and not as much towards the educational side of things. It is still helping you with those core classes. And then there are a lot of DSEs also that are online or hybrid. So mm-hmm. I think that helps too when you're comparing programs. If you say like, I can't afford to move across the country to go to graduate school, or I need to at least be able to work part-time. I think the DSE is another one of those programs that would allow you to do that.
From a big picture standpoint, I think we've given a pretty decent overview of some of the options out there if people want to pursue a terminal degree, because I think it is probably the best way to get into academia and stay long-term, right? I think, like I said, having a DPT in some sort of board specialty will get your foot in the door for sure, and you can probably teach with that. But I know it definitely kind of comes to, the CAPTI rule again, and just making sure you have enough terminal degrees to make sure you can bring on some of those DPT folks that are really good clinically and are board certified specialists. So I think we, like I said, kind of have given a good overview. Let's now talk a little bit then about, all right, you decided that you may want to go into academia, right? You're a DPT and you're thinking about academia in that 5-year down the road kind of vision. What are some advice or tips or tricks or pointers that you would give to people to start doing and getting involved in if they do want to indeed pursue a terminal degree and go into academia eventually? Christine, let's start with you.
Yeah. So one thing that I tell people a lot is really kind of hone in on your goal. So why are you pursuing the degree, right? So you got to dig a little bit deeper than just, I want to go into academia. Or even if you're that DPT and you're adjuncting, right? And you're like, you know, I really want to look at this as full-time work. What is your end goal with getting the degree? Because that will help you narrow down which one maybe you should explore a little bit more. And then kind of factoring in all the things that we've kind of touched on a little bit already, right? Like, are you going to pick up and move? Are you going to stop working full time? I mean, that's what I did. I moved halfway across the country. I stopped working full time so I could do it and be done, right? That was kind of the other impetus to not doing it part time, is do it, be done with it, get the skills, experience that I need, and kind of move into other things. So what's your end goal? If you're thinking PhD route sounds attractive for whatever reason, being able to figure out sometimes too, I maybe don't 100% love the particular line of research that my potential advisor is doing, but I can gain skills in that environment that are going to serve me later. Kind of a good example would be, maybe they're doing biomechanics research in shoulder. You can take all of that biomechanics knowledge and now apply it to whatever other body part that you might be super interested in down the road, right? But you have that basic understanding of how to do that type of research. So that may also be something to think about. And that's what I did. I don't run a lab. And I'm not doing mouse research anymore. Completely not anything related to my PhD is my line of research right now. But I had the basic understanding of how to conduct a research study. I'm getting back into clinical research now as a kind of a consultant as well. So that's kind of, again, opening other doors based on that skill set. So I think if you're factoring in, what's my end goal? How can I position myself for learning research skill? Because I know that's going to be a part of academia. And what am I able to do as far as finances and moving and all those pieces have to. You know, you might not know exactly in 5 years where you're going to be, but you may have a pretty good idea already of that's an option or that's a hard no.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Karina, how about you? What are your tips for people interested?
Yeah, I mean, I think getting as much experience is important. I think it is very different doing a 1-hour lecture versus standing up in front of a class for 2 or 3 hours, you know, so I think getting to see that and also trying to see what you can do outside of the area of specialty that you're currently practicing in, because ortho and neuro are kind of, you know, those building blocks. But if you're doing primarily pelvic health, you're not going to be able to go do a program, you know, go teach for a program and just do pelvic health. You're going to have to learn how to teach neuro or basic, you know, clinical skills or things like that. So don't just adjunct and do the things that you feel you're already an expert in. I started adjuncting in certain things where it was completely out of my comfort zone, because that really helped me get back into the literature, look at the textbooks again, you know, and see, is this something that I want to do? Because you're always going to have to keep going back to literature and reading those types of things as an instructor. You're not going to be able to just rely on your experiential knowledge. All of us went to PT school a while ago. So, you know, there's been lots of updates even from when we went to PT school. And so you have to relearn a lot of things that you thought you knew. And so that's my big advice for people, is make sure that you're ready to get back into that, and you're ready to continue basically going back to PT school yourself a little bit in order to be in academia. And then last would be just like volunteer if you can, if you know somebody in academia, to be able to talk about curriculum development or to be able to work with them on some course objectives. If you are an adjunct in a class, you know, ask to be able to do some of those skills that Christine talked about at the beginning, that are the things that hit you in the face as a first time faculty member, that, oh, not only do I have to develop all this, I also have to learn how to use Canvas and go to a faculty meeting and be on this committee or serve on faculty senate or whatever you're doing, because that's the stuff that I think also will make you more of an attractive candidate when you're interviewing, that you can say you have experience in that.
Yeah, I love that. Those are great takeaways. Well, ladies, thank you so much for taking the time and for coming on to educate our audience in all things terminal degree land. We ask all of our guests this one final question. And that question is, if you could change one aspect of higher education, whether it be DPT or otherwise, what aspect would you change and how would you change it?
So I think we're seeing some of this already, but I would love to see more flexibility. I think undergrad does a good job of, you know, you can change majors and do all those kinds of things. But I feel like in PT, especially, and in graduate school, we need more flexibility in terms of, I might start down the OT path, but really decide that PT is for me. Or, you know, PT really sparked my interest in diagnostic imaging or pharmacology or some of these other things. Maybe I'm going to go do radiology or a nursing thing. And I feel like we're doing a disservice by saying you now have to start over your career path, right? And so I think there are opportunities for flexibility and overlap, or maybe it's not PT PhD programs, maybe it's PT MBA programs where we're now teaching you how to run a business. And things like that. So I think there's lots of great collaborations that can come out of being more flexible in how we're delivering content, or, you know, who's teaching what things and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I love that, Christine. I think that, you know, we don't get taught business. I teach the business and admin course for us, and it's very, very little surface level stuff. So these students that are graduating with insane amounts of debt have no idea how to run a business or start a private practice. But what's worse, they don't know how to, you know, do a proper interview, red flags to look for, contracts to take, how to negotiate a salary. Like, they don't know a lot of the business acumen stuff and how healthcare business works and how we even get paid, right? So they have no idea. They just think, oh, I'll just graduate and make six figures and everything will be great. And it's like, well, it doesn't exactly work that way. You have to understand how we get reimbursed, if you will, or paid. And then what that looks like from a salary standpoint, et cetera, et cetera. So just the sheer real world business acumen would be nice, you know. And we, you know, a lot of times we'll hear the argument, oh, we don't have time to teach that. It's not all on the MPTE. I understand. But if we're trying to set these students up for success in the real world once they graduate, we got to give them something. I'm a big fan of that. Karina, how about you? Let's hear your answer.
Mine kind of really builds along those lines. Is we have to teach to the NPTE, right? We have to help them pass their boards, but we're not giving them a real view of what's beyond that. It's like the goal is the passing the NPTE. There you go. You know, you're done. And we know that people go on to other programs or some, you know, there's so many things. That's what I loved about physical therapy in the first place, was that there were so many avenues that I could take that degree. I work with patients getting wheelchairs, and a lot of the wheelchair vendors and the DME vendors are PTs and OTs. And I didn't even know that was an option going into PT school. So I think if we can allow students to have some more of those experiences, I realize we can't fit it all into the curriculum, but if we could design some time for students to be able to explore other options within the realm of healthcare or other things that they can do with their degree, you know, consulting, teaching, working for a DME company, international instruction, you know, outreach, advocacy, all of those things. That's what I would love to see. So like you said, they can come out with a little bit more of a plan, even if it's a long-term plan, even if it's, I want to go practice for 5 years and then I want to go to this, at least they're not starting from scratch. Or they may think like, yeah, I want to be a business owner and then go shadow somebody who owns their own PT practice and think, oh my goodness, I can't do that. You know, that's too much. But if you try to jump into it without any of that shadowing opportunity, it's going to be really hard to make that decision.
Yeah. I mean, at the very least, we got to bring awareness to all the opportunities out there, right? And I think with things like population health becoming more popular and integrative wellness and medicine, you know, and I think that lines right up very well with physical therapy and direction that we can head and opportunities that are available to us and, you know, even non-clinical options, right? I've interviewed a bunch of people that have worked in non-clinical jobs and done great, you know, patient-client management or patient-client satisfaction or equipment testing. A lot of options out there. And again, we have to at least take the time to make them aware that these are even options, right? We don't have to spend a whole semester on it, but hey guys, it's not just 9 to 5 clock in, clock out physical therapy work and patient care work. Mm-hmm. Like there are other options out there. I have an interview on the books as well that I can't wait for with a hospital CEO who's a PT. So mm-hmm. we can be CEOs too. It's crazy, right? But that is within our lexicon. We have the skills. We have a lot of the knowledge. It's going to be life experience. And like you said, having a long-term plan, but we can do that. You know, we can do things like that. And they need to know that those are options. And really, I think, you know, we're the only ones that need to give ourselves permission to do those things. So. Well, ladies, thanks so much again for your time and for taking time out to come talk to our audience and educate them. Where can people find you if they want to just follow up and ask more questions or see what you ladies are up to these days?
Yeah. So I'm at the College of St. Scholastica. So you search CSS. It's in Duluth, Minnesota. All of our faculty information, email, phone is posted on our website. So you can find me there. And I'm on Instagram a little bit, but not that much. So old school over here a little bit. Email's probably the best way to get a hold of me. And the same thing. So I'm at South College, specifically the Knoxville campus. So people can find my information on there and email me. I am on Twitter. It's at @Karina_DPT. But mainly I'm on Twitter for when I'm at CSM because I'm the program chair for the Academy of Pelvic Health. So most of my postings are CSM related, but they can also, I've had some people that have, you know, messaged me there. And so I'm always happy to answer those. But email, again, same thing. I am old school. That's the one thing. I feel like you can either be on social media or you're not. Like, there's no in between.
No in between. All right. Well, we'll put those links in the show notes so everybody can find them easily. Again, thank you guys so much for your time, and I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thank you for inviting
us. Thank you so much.
Well, I hope that episode was entertaining as much as it was informational and educational. If you enjoyed this episode or any of our past episodes, we ask you to please subscribe to the podcast and leave us a rating and review. And please share out the episodes to those who you feel may be able to benefit from them. We also urge you to follow us on all social media platforms @HET Podcast and let us know what topics or experts you would like to hear from in future episodes. And just as a reminder, none of the information on today's show should be considered medical advice. It's simply infotainment or edutainment to help educate our audience. For medical advice, we always advise you to reach out to your preferred medical professionals, and we'll see you on the next show.